Broadway talks back.
The play of the evening, Christopher Blake.
John Beaufort, writing for the Christian Science Monitor, says,
Christopher Blake is not so deep as a well, nor so wide as a church door, but it serves for some intense and poignant observation on the ordeal that divorce can create for a child.
John Chapman of the Daily News writes,
I thought it a soap opera of no particular quality aside from the novelty of its presentation.
Our Broadway guest, talking back for Christopher Blake, is the author-director, Moss Hart. Now, Broadway Talks Back presents its host and referee, Barrett H. Clark.
Thank you, and good evening. Broadway Talks Back, transcribed by Mutual from our Long Acre Theater just before curtain time, is a free-for-all ad-lib discussion of some new Broadway play or musical. Every week, Broadway has a chance to trade brickbats and bouquets with the drama critics. Tonight's play reviewers are John Chapman and John Beaufort. Mr. Chapman is drama critic for the Daily News, and Mr. Beaufort is chief of the New York News Bureau and drama critic of the Christian Science Monitor. Facing the critics is our Broadway guest, Moss Hart. A who's who of the theater would credit Mr. Hart with many of the top musical and comedy hits of the past 16 years. His new play, Christopher Blake, marks his first venture as a serious playwright, which makes tonight's discussion doubly important to everyone. Mr. Hart also rates a double credit as author and director of the production. Printed reviews checked give us an interesting critics box score on Christopher Blake. 3 were rave notices, 4 were mixed, and 4 were unfavorable. Before hearing some of these varying opinions, we'd like our listeners to hear the story of Christopher Blake. Christopher Blake is the 12-year-old son of parents whose marriage is ending in divorce. Waiting in the judge's chambers, Christopher has heard all the arguments. Heartsick and disillusioned, he still loves his parents and desperately wants to live a normal life with them. His fears and perplexities, his pride and resentment, take shape in fantastic daydreams, and in each of these, Chris plays the central role. We see him at the White House as a national hero committing suicide because of the divorce, then as a great actor rehearsing a scene before his mother as a prep school boy whose parents have forgotten him at Christmas. And next, Christopher pictures himself as the wealthy son of foster parents who visit his real mother and father in a poorhouse and renounces them. And finally, he sees himself in a court scene where he is bullied, mocked, and tortured. At that point, the boy is called before the real judge who presides over the Blake case. Confronted with the necessity of choosing between his mother and his father, Chris breaks down. His parents try to make him understand their problems, and their pleas provide him with his answer. He chooses the father as the weaker of the two, and therefore the parent who needs him most. And now let's hear from our critics. Mr. Beaufort, will you summarize the points of your review, please?
Well, the final scenes are superbly done. No one can challenge Mr. Hart for the choice of incidents he uses to portray Christopher's dream world. But sometimes these scenes have a way of losing contact with the deeper fears and heartaches of the boy. The revolving stage approach was perhaps better suited to Lady in the Dark than it is to Christopher Blake. In my opinion, the challenging nature of the material would demand more searching dramatic treatment instead of the rather theatrical treatment. As a director, Mr. Hart sometimes tends to force the actors into a kind of stridency. But this is really quibbling over what was on the whole a fine performance. The production by Mr. Horner is excellent.
And now, your main points, Mr. Chapman, please.
Well, my respect for Mr. Hart as a theatrical craftsman and as a writer of imagination is high. And my disappointment in this play doesn't lower this respect. However, I feel that the play was dealing with slick paper fiction or radio serial characters, begging the radio's pardon, and it was therefore over-sentimentalized. I could not believe in Christopher's parents or, to a lesser extent of disbelief, in the boy himself. Therefore, I did not care what was happening to them as much as I should, and I couldn't share the emotions which seemed to grip a large share of the audience. I think Mr. Hart was a little awed at the prospect of writing his first serious play.
Now, Mr. Hart, this is your opening.
I should like to reverse the procedure of dramatic criticism and review Mr. Chapman's notice of my new play, Christopher Blake. By an odd coincidence, I have Mr. Chapman's notice before me. It is headed, and I quote, Christopher Blake suffers from the curse of an aching heart.
H-A-R-T. Get it?
I trust you listeners have caught the delicate subtlety of this jest. I am tempted in turn to head my own review with such choice morsels of wit as The Chapman Cometh. Nobody loves a Chapman. Chap hands, here comes Chapman. But I despair of ever surpassing Mr. Chapman's Bob Wit, which is served hot and unfunny to 2 million readers the morning after every play opens. I mention the 2 million readers because, you see, Mr. Chapman is not writing for the amusement of his family and immediate friends, but has the responsible position of reporting to his readers accurately and with some degree of integrity the merit of the play he is reviewing. That is the function of a dramatic critic. It is a position of responsibility and power for which, unfortunately, no license is required. Right here, I should like to make it clear that I, of course, have no quarrel with Mr. Chapman's right to dislike my play. I demand, and it is my right to demand, that Mr. Chapman review this play in terms that are neither frivolous or vulgar, since I have taken care to be neither. An important part, in fact the closing portion of Mr. Chapman's review, was devoted to a slight accident backstage, in which a piece of scenery fell and made quite a loud noise. This mishap must have impressed Mr. Chapman profoundly, since he reviewed it with the utmost precision and clarity. Just what it had to do with the merits of Christopher Blake seems a bit vague to me at the moment. But I am glad that Mr. Chapman's love for the theater and his integrity as a critic was revived. Perhaps I can arrange neat little backstage accidents making even louder noises on all my future opening nights. Since Mr. Chapman dismissed a serious and honest effort on my part with a bad joke at the beginning of his review, and a meaningless non sequitur at the end. Let me repeat. I do not reject thoughtful and reasoned criticism, even if unfavorable. My request of Mr. Chapman is that he use the same standards of taste and discrimination to bear in reviewing a play that I attempt to use in writing one. In defense of Mr. Chapman, there are other critics with worse habits than sloppy writing and bad jokes. Those critics and those habits must remain nameless unless I am invited back again, a pleasure I would cherish. I am pleased to report that in spite of Mr. Chapman's pedestrian notice, Christopher Blake is a healthy and lusty youngster at the Music Box Theater. I am sure that a bad notice from me will not curtail Mr. Chapman's run on the Daily News, but I respectfully suggest that Mr. Chapman arm himself with the equipment generally conceded to be necessary for those who would be arbiters of the art.
Does this critic want to talk back?
I think the first thing I'm going to arm myself with is a crash helmet. Mr. Hart is plotting another accident. I'm not sure it's going to happen backstage. However, Mr. Hart led off a very good and very witty review of a review by complaining about a headline. I'd like to ask Mr. Hart a question. You wrote a play called The Man Who Came to Dinner.
Yeah.
We're co-author. With whom in mind?
Mr. Wolcott.
Alexander Wolcott. Mm-hmm. Well, Alexander Wolcott was a drama critic, wasn't he?
He was indeed, and a very good one.
And a very good one. I agree on that. I think you will find also that Mr. Wolcott was a very pithy drama critic, and he loved a short and pithy line, a funny line.
Yes, he was a very naughty dramatic critic, too. I remember those, John, as well as you do. I remember he reviewed a play in which Odette Myrtle was appearing and headed his review, Odette, Where Is Thy Sting?
Yes.
I think Miss Myrtle had a good deal of cause for complaint, too, and so did the playwright who played you.
Well, I don't know.
It seems to me, getting back, I'm not going to try to defend my own humor, but I did think that was kind of a funny line. I do not believe many people complain about critics making jokes at the expense of someone. Now, I thought of that
headline.
That is
not my complaint, John. Mr. Shaw was a very fine dramatic criticism, a critic, but he did not indulge in what I can only describe as Broadway journalese, or, to make it really nasty, gutter journalism. There's quite a difference between Mr. Shaw's review of a play and what you would get. My objection, John, is that I read you every day, religiously. Now, my impression from your headline...
I think you better cancel your subscription.
No, my impression from the headline is that this is the kind of heading you give to a play that opens on a Thursday and closes on Saturday. This is the review of a turkey, so-called in Broadway ease. And that is my objection. I object to a frivolous and a kind of vulgar heading.
Well, I don't think it was frivolous. I thought it over very carefully, and I thought it said, quite essentially, about as much as I managed to say in the next column and a half. It expressed my attitude toward that play.
Well,
I wasn't trying to be flippant.
Well,
I think that your own solemnity, your own overawed consideration of the seriousness of this problem made the thing...
That may be. I can't defend my liking for Christopher Blake and your dislike of it. I don't intend to. But I submit and I insist that there is nothing, there is no portion of Christopher Blake, however solemn or serious, that is as cheaply and shoddily written as your notice of Christopher Blake.
Well, I don't think that it was cheaply and shoddily written, Mr. Hart.
Well, now, do you think the closing portion of your review, which reviews the accident backstage, is dramatic criticism?
It was in this case. Also, I'm a newspaper man as well as a reviewer. I was quite impressed when this accident happened at the superb job that Miss Sleeper and young Mr. Tyler, who were alone on the stage, did. Lesser actors than they could have faltered in their lines, and that uncertainty could have gone all through the audience and spoiled the mood of that scene. And to me, that is what makes an actor, and they were really actors. When they were in there pitching, they paid no attention to the crash
of
that
plate. How do you account for the fact that you were the only critic who mentioned the accident?
Perhaps I'm the only newspaper man. I don't know.
Well,
I think it was mentioned by one other, but not at this length. There are 21 lines here, Mr. Hart.
Yes, the closing notice of a review is generally given over to a crystallization or a summation of the play. The play is dismissed with, as I say, a bad joke in the beginning and a meaningless non sequitur at the end, to me.
I think also in your review of my review, you skipped too blithely from the headline to the closing paragraph about the accident, and which was written in admiration. I think you will find a fairly thorough outline of the play and an outline, to the best of my ability and judgment, of what you were trying to say and indicate. I was not being flippant.
It's a very, very dull synopsis of the play, yes.
May I interrupt this for a second? Mr. Hart, do you happen to have a review of Mr. Beaufort's review?
No, I haven't. I'm sorry.
I'm profoundly grateful. In fact, I've never been happier than I am at the present time to be on the sidelines. It's just I'm sitting here sort of watching Mr. Hart, and every time he speaks, I duck, but I watch Mr. Chapman, too, and take it.
My complaint, Mr. Beaufort and Mr. Chapman, is it has to be, of course, specifically on the notice of Christopher Blake. But the issue is a larger one, John. To my mind, there is, coming into dramatic reviewing, a kind of journalese that I don't like to see. Now, Mr. Chapman has given
Name, what do you mean by journalese? People use that word very loosely and usually wrongly.
I give you...
I take great pride in my grammar and in my spelling and in my knowledge of words.
All right, I give you Mr. Garland.
No, you can have it. I don't know.
John.
Wouldn't do that to anybody, I don't think. But Mr. Garland's reviews are, it seems to me, written in bad high school prose, for one thing.
and his proclivity of going out of town to see shows is wrong. I don't think Mr. Garland would like it if an author looked over his shoulder while he was writing a review and was going to redraft it and took his piece of paper out of the typewriter and reviewed it.
Well, I should think you'd be very grateful for the interest that Mr. Garland shows in the theater. He is the most devoted of theater followers. He will go hundreds of miles to see a play when the rest of us think, oh, well, we'll take a night off.
My enthusiasm for that devotion hasn't been touched as yet.
Mr. Garland, among other things, spoke of the boy, Christopher Blake, in the play as being pathological. I don't know whether he was referring to the writing or to the acting. I think a good many of us are very much interested in young Tyler's acting. And you, who directed him, would perhaps be able to tell us a little about how you worked with the boy, if you don't mind.
He's a very talented young actor. It wasn't difficult to direct young Dick at all. He's an astonishing talent.
He did a beautiful job.
Certainly not pathological. Hmm. By any means.
Well, that was one of the things your friend Mr. Garland said. He said it was a sprawling melodrama and confusing.
Well, my objection was that Mr. Garland writes this weekend diary of an idiot, or whatever it's called. And am I on the right program of
go to
talking
it.
Back?
We pull no punches here, Mr. Hart.
I think that's right, don't you?
Perfectly right.
And,
I mean, you're saying what you said.
My objection, of course, this is getting very far away. I'd better not go on with this because it's getting very far away from your point, John. I should come back to it, I suppose.
Well, let me come back to something. I think you're trying to make me reform and be a little more solemn than I want to be. I see no reason for not being able to write about the theater and still be amusing about it.
Not at all.
And
Mr. Shore and Mr. Wilcott were extremely amusing.
Yes.
All you have
they
to do is to follow their suit.
But now, I remember you had an interview some time ago, I think it was in PM, discussing what you might do next and what you had done. And I believe then you had a serious play in mind. But you, looking over all of your work, you said that you thought that that social comment could be made in terms of humor.
Oh, I do.
As it was with Lady in the Dark. Well, I don't know why the dramatic comment can't be made in terms of humor also.
Well, it has to be good humor.
And good criticism.
Yes.
Chacun a son goût.
Mr. Hart, you evidently read dramatic reviews with some regularity. May I ask you very frankly?
My life depends upon it. I say I do.
Well, let me ask you. To what extent do you feel that dramatic criticism, whether it is adverse or encomiastic, actually helps you as a playwright or director?
Well, I learned a good deal from dramatic criticism, from a couple of Mr. Chapman's reviews of various plays. He hasn't liked everything I've done. This is true, John. This is the one notice I've ever objected to of yours, and I've already given the reasons. I don't want to restate them. But I violently, if I sound angry and violently resentful, I am.
Well, that's your right. I'm glad you are. That all makes for fun, and I think you have every right to express your resentment.
Mr. Beaufort, I
enjoy
you,
it.
Pardon me.
I can answer. Oh, I'm sorry. May
go
I
ahead,
answer
please.
Mr. Chapman's point, yes. Which I've been shirking for a moment. You're right, John. There is no reason for dramatic reviewing to be solemn. But I think you must differentiate. You have a great many followers, myself included. This notice, I don't know how bad you thought the play was, and it is your privilege to think it was very bad, but I don't think you would say it was that so-called turkey. I think if you review a play of this kind, if I may be permitted to say of this kind, I think then you must differentiate. I think it can be done with humor, certainly, but not as dismissively and as frivolously as this. This is my chief objection.
It was not done. Now, the headline you consider frivolous. I think that it was very much to the point, and the notice itself was far from frivolous.
Well, this was my impression of it.
Well, it was,
Mr. Beaufort.
It reviewed the play as if it were a soap opera, and it seems to me, incidentally, I'm on Mr. Hart's side in this, only he doesn't need anybody to be on his side. He just goes right along defending himself and attacking Mr. Chapman in a most delightful manner. It's wonderful. And any...
I want to be on this program every week.
Write some more critics next time, Mr. Hart.
Oh, anybody who would allow Mr. Hart to talk back to him, I think, ought to have his head examined. I don't know. That's no reflection on Mr. Chapman, who is a much more brilliant humorist, obviously, by his headlines than I am. But I would like to say that it seems to me that a dramatic criticism owes it to the author of a play who has taken really a very courageous step, as it seemed to me Mr. Hart took in this play, of completely turning his back on the thing that has made him popular over a great many years and adventuring into an entirely new and rather original, as far as that goes, dramatic problem, an exceedingly interesting treatment. There was some part of the theatrical mounting of it, I must say I had some reservations about, but it seemed to me that it was a tremendously tender and intimate play, and it grasped a problem with great poignancy and great emotion, and I think particularly in the that scene where the child moves from this horrible nightmare of the imaginary courtroom where he's just been reduced to a complete emotional pulp and victimized by his imagination, and then goes into this cheerless courtroom and finds a certain sort of a kindness, particularly on the part of the judge, and that the whole contrast of moods in that situation seemed to me magnificently handled, and that wasn't the only such scene in the play. As I say, Mr. Hart doesn't need any defense from me, but it seems to me that Mr. Chapman's review really overlooked not only what Mr. Hart was trying to do, but also his very considerable achievement in doing it.
I seem to be the one that's having his head examined, all right.
Go ahead. Let's have some more examination.
No, I don't. I don't think I have anything further to add about it. It's just that I didn't believe the boy. I didn't believe the parents even more than the boy, and so I couldn't get emotionally worked up about the play. And I'm sorry I didn't.
No, I think you have an absolute right to dislike a play. Mr. Beaufort has said it very pertinently. I think, as a newspaper man and as a reporter, if you're going to report a backstage accident, then I think it's right to report that that audience was deeply moved. You give an impression of that. But I think as a dramatic reporter, you must say that this is a play that is not like a regulation play that opens at the Nora Bay's roof, which is the impression I got from your notice.
Oh, no, I think you'd better write some of his plays, Mr. Hart, and find out how they're treated.
Of course, if they were all reviewed like Mr. Chapman's review of Christopher Blake, you probably couldn't afford to write many more. what do you think, by the way, Mr. Hart, of reviewers who say, particularly on radio programs, well, you ought to write another play just like the one I've beaten your head, beaten you over the head for having put on a couple of weeks ago?
I wish Mr. Chapman would understand this. My objection is to this specific notice.
Yes, I
not
understand.
Not to Mr. Chapman as a critic or his right to dislike a play. This, to me, is bad reporting, which I'm sure hurts Mr. Chapman much more than my saying it's bad dramatic criticism. But I really feel that very deeply and very keenly. And in that sense, it's an unfair notice, because I defy anyone from reading this notice to in any way know what I try to do, whether I succeeded or not. It's an important subject. It's extremely well done. I might as well say this. I feel it is. It is not.
I think you're just a headline reader.
He evidently read the end of it, Mr. Chapman.
No, I read the book very carefully, but I wanted to be on very sound ground in attacking you, John, because you have an absolute right to dislike the play. It's a question of the degree and in which you turn your dislike that I object to.
Well, I think that business about the reporting is a... There's a certain justification to that, Mr. Hart, because a reviewer for a daily newspaper has a certain somewhat different obligation than a reviewer, say, for a weekly or something like that. Of course, it's a question how far you can carry it, because
if this play opened on a Saturday night,
you might feel called upon to report on that, too. But I don't think you can... there is the story of the reporter who went to hear a singer and came back and said there was no concert because she had her pearls stolen, but he failed to file a story on it. And I think there is that joining of the two functions in a reviewer for a daily newspaper.
Well, as far as it happening on a Saturday goes and the notice appearing on Monday, I didn't mean that this report about the accident should be something spot news I'd call the city desk about and get in immediately. It wasn't that important. But the importance of the thing to me was the splendid manner in which the two actors carried it off.
Well, now, let me ask you something, John. Suppose you reviewed a play of mine. Or suppose I wrote a play in which the entire last act was given over to some personal catastrophe that it was completely extraneous to the play itself. Suppose you were reviewing a play in which for two acts it was a play, and suddenly in the third act I had put on the stage some personal catastrophe which had nothing to do with the play itself. What would you say?
Well, I don't quite understand. You mean it was something that, instead of having the regular third act, something else happened?
I'm sorry, yes. Mr. Chapman. Our warm thanks to critics John Beaufort and John Chapman for the provocative views on Christopher Blake which they have given us. And Broadway Talks Back is very proud to have had the author-director here to talk back. Thanks for being our guest tonight, Moss Hart. I'm going to give you next week's program in a moment, but meantime, may we hear a message from you, Jay Jackson.
Every week at this time, Mutual invites you to listen in, write in, join in Broadway Talks Back. Listen in as the drama critics and Broadway guests talk about new plays and musicals. Write in. Send us your reasons in 200 words or less as to why you would like to see Christopher Blake or why you would not like to see it. The five most interesting letters in the opinion of our judges will receive a beautiful Whitnor watch, guaranteed for dependability by the Longines Whitnor Watch Company. Letters must be mailed before Thursday midnight to Broadway Talks Back in care of the Mutual Broadcasting System, New York 18. Write in for tickets if you'd like to join in Broadway Talks Back here at the Longacre. We'll send you tickets as promptly as possible. Stay tuned for the prize winners on Joan of Lorraine. Now our host, Barrett H. Clark.
Instead of discussing a play next week, we'll talk about a musical. Representing the new musical comedy Park Avenue will be Mary Wicks, one of the leading players, and Arthur Schwartz, composer and movie producer. Critics for next session will be Robert Coleman of the Daily Mirror and William Hawkins of the New York World Telegram. We hope you will join us next week to hear about Park Avenue.
Prize-winning letters on Joan of Lorraine were written by Mrs. William N. Fear, Cadillac, Michigan, Ellen V. Watson, Washington, D.C., Arthur Botchner, Elizabeth, New Jersey, Mrs. George Callan, Selma, Alabama, and Henry Winslow, Springfield, Massachusetts. Next Monday, Broadway Talks Back will have Mary Wicks and Arthur Schwartz as the Broadway guests talking back for the new musical comedy Park Avenue. Robert Coleman and William Hawkins will be our critics. Barrett H. Clark, director of the Dramatist Play Service, will be our host and referee. You've been listening to Moss Hart, author and director of Christopher Blake, talking back to drama critics John Chapman and John Beaufort. Join in tonight's program by writing in. Broadway Talks Back is produced by Gertrude Berg and Vera Eichel, transcribed by Mutual just before curtain time from the Longacre Theater. Roger Bauer directed. Your announcer is Jay Jackson. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.